Okay, I apologize. We just started recording, so sorry about that. Okay, let's go.
Okay. So, again, yeah, thanks for inviting me. And I, if I roll back the parable to the university years, then there was a lot of searching that kind of began in 10 years of university, more towards the middle, when I started to kind of open myself up to going to graduate school, and that process led to like an inner searching. Something got lit up inside of me, like a beginning of a calling that I think a lot of people experience. And obviously people like Mother Teresa and St. Francis are very famous for their answering their call, but I think it's a calling in all of us. And as the Course says, everyone is called, few choose to listen. So we're just some of the listeners now that choose to listen to the Spirit. But so it got my background was a very eclectic background, and then I got into graduate school in psychology. And prior to that, I was opening and reading in lots of fields in philosophy and doing a lot of work both at school and in the library, just going very deep into things. And then in 1986, I went out to a humanistic psychology conference in La Jolla, California, and there was a lot of amazing teachers, Francis Lam, a transpersonal psychologist, Carl Rogers, a very famous psychologist, many, many that were out there, Fritjof Capra, the Tao of Physics. It was a beautiful conference, and I found myself being drawn to these two students of Tara Singh, a Course in Miracles teacher, that were actually at the conference and had a booth down where all the psychologists were selling their CDs and books and DVDs. And that's where I came across the Course in Miracles, and I came across a book by Kenneth Wapnick on forgiveness and Jesus, and then a book by Tara Singh called Nothing Real Can Be Threatened. So that was how I initially came into it, and then I just felt these waves of love, like a tsunami of love pouring over me when I first opened the book, and I just had the feeling like my whole life would go in a different direction than it had, and then that what came after that would take me probably a week to tell you about, because that was 3 decades ago when that I just described to you happened, that experience of encountering the Course. So 3 decades later, it would take me a long time to explain what's gone on since then, but that's a good introduction.
Okay, great. And so something happened for you where you had done all of this study in psychology and philosophy. So without going into all the specifics, but what was different? Like there was something you said that drew you. So you described this feeling of love. Were you sensing that something else was here, like something that you had been searching for, or something clicked?
Yeah, I felt like basically that my life up to that point, for those 20, maybe 27, going on 28 years, had been like a prayer of asking for help, of asking for clarity, of asking for purpose and love and intimacy and harmony. And I was praying a very deep prayer. And so I felt this intuitive feeling that when the Course came into my life, that this was the answer to a prayer. And I was quite well read, and I had a whole stack of books by my bed, on my bedstand and nightstand. And then when the Course came, it was such a strong feeling that this was my like life's work and the answer to my prayer, that I just basically read the Course. I didn't even read the newspaper after that. I just basically read the Course all the time. So I would say it clicked in a big way, and also had a strong feeling like I had no excuses. Like before, I was always saying to God, yeah, I wish you would make it a little more straightforward and clear and give me a little more clear direction. And then when the Course came, I I really felt like I had no excuses. Now it came down to study and practical application.
Right, right. And I can say, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when I really delved into the course, I had this sense that as a physician, coming from it from that angle, I'd been really searching for healing and understanding healing at deeper level and had studied so many things. And then when I got to this place, I felt like, you know, like if I stuck with this, all my questions would be answered. So I felt that from healing. So I can definitely resonate with what you're saying. So when I know that I read that you spent hours and hours, you know, just a lot of time studying and all of that. But then something happened where we're just getting into the levels of the mind that, can you talk about how that diagram was given to you, how that arrived for you?
Yeah, I think, again, that was kind of an answer to a prayer where I am very visual. I certainly enjoy all types of learning, audio learning, auditory learning, and multifaceted kind of learning. But I was very, very visual. In fact, when I was back in, I think, seventh grade or so, social studies, they had us drawing maps, and I would always love drawing maps and coloring in the maps and practicing coloring inside the line, you know, like even when much younger. I always was fascinated by those graphics. So when I am trying to really comprehend something, a picture for me is worth 1,000 words, as the saying goes. So I think that was a prayer of my heart, and really I was talking to Jesus a lot and receiving a lot from Jesus. So I basically said to Jesus one day, could you give me a map of the mind that would show me graphically what you're trying to convey here in the course, because that will make things so much clearer, and I think I'll have a far greater grasp at applying the workbook lessons if I can get a graphic picture of what this is that I can really connect with. So that's how it came about.
Yeah, and I know when I came to your drawing, as I was sharing with you, David, it just, like, it made so much sense right away. It just made so much. It was like the map you were looking for and you wish you had, you know, that, like 10 years ago, I wish I had this. And, you know, my life would have been much more easier. And, yeah, it resonated for me right away. So,
like a treasure map. That's like our treasure map.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's like I can use this to find the treasure within me, right? Use this. Yeah. And when I found it, I didn't have a picture. Like I didn't have I just saw you talk about it in this YouTube video where you explain about it, which is on the Levels of Mind actually website. But I got out like my compass and circle and started drawing it and putting in all the things. So I felt exactly like what you said, like a child has found, you know, something, you know, that's going to be very, very, very precious, definitely. So I'm wondering if we could start with that. And unfortunately, this is just audio, but I think many here are familiar with that. And if you're not, we can refer you to the diagram. I can give that information later. But if we start with this, so we've got this map and it's got these circles, and if we started with perception, let's just start right at the beginning. So I know I've heard you talk so many times about saying things like, you think you have a perceptual problem, or there is a perceptual addiction, or we're addicted to our perception. So let's just start there and let's talk about that. What is perception? What are we talking about when we say perception?
Well, perception is, we could say the gross perceptual world is the linear world of time and space, the entire cosmos. And so it has a lot of specifics, objects, images. It's a pictorial representation of consciousness, but it is fragmented. It's very fragmented and it's very, very distorted. And that's not to say that it has to be that way. As Jesus says, this need not be. There is something we could call healed or whole perception, which another way of saying it is unified perception. where everything is completely connected and unified, very much like the unified field that is talked about in quantum physics. So perception is, you might say, what the five senses are reporting, and basically the five senses are part of this distorted consciousness, and they're just reporting sights and sounds that really aren't there, but it's kind of like a mirage. If you were in the desert and you saw a mirage and something just appeared in the desert, that's what perception is. It's sights and sounds that don't really have a reality.
Yeah, and speaking at it from like a level, like just from a physician or someone, let's say, is working with another client, or even in myself, like even the fact that we're having this discussion and we're saying this is perception already starts something, because most of the time if we listen to what seems to be talked about in the world, it's images and it's perception, but it's never talked about as perception. It's talked about this is reality.
Yeah, it's assumed. Assume that right. There's actually factual things that actually are real and that actually happen. And so I would say time is assumed. So the linear world that's based on time is assumed to be reality, and it couldn't be farther from the truth. But you could say that if everything in that perception suddenly became completely unified, where there was no distinction between anything and anything else, then it's almost like how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin? If you could took all of time and space and the whole cosmos, and you could put it right onto the point of a pin, then that would give you a very different view of the cosmos, a very pointed view. And so that's what we might say is what we're coming to with healed perception, is a very unified, simultaneous view of perception instead of a long, drawn-out, linear view of time and space.
So if someone is coming to this tool and, like, they're wanting to use this, so the first step would be to, first of all, write out what their perception is of whatever situation they're facing, right? That would be the first step.
Yeah, it's almost like if somebody went into a psychotherapist and the psychotherapist said, sit down and said, tell me about your life. They would start talking about the people, the events, their past, perhaps their future worries and concerns. So, yeah, when we start off with this tool, we want it to be very practical, and therefore you would put down your past or future actions, your situations, events that are causing you upset. Some of you who have followed me for a number of years know that you really have to know the ins and outs, but actually when I had a group of students in the early 1990s, when this tool was developed, Instrument for Peace, it was basically called Instrument for Peace Healing Upsets. I actually did at one point with the students, I did make another instrument for peace, and it was actually titled Healing the Pleasure. And that, most people don't realize that pleasure and pain are both part of the ego, and they both hold you back. So most people have always used the instrument for peace in terms of healing upsets, but it could be used for the ego's positive pleasureful feelings as well as the ego's negative ones. And so that is a whole other depth of taking this all the way down to the kingdom of heaven. But yes, that first part is describing the actions, events, happenings, memories, and even future worries and concerns in terms of persons, places, things. It's very, very practical.
It is, and I remember reading someplace you've written that this whole path of to peace of mind, it's 1% inspiration and 99% practical application, right?
So yes, that's it.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. So for me, it feels like when I do this work and when I, you know, ask those who are working with me, I feel that the first step in even just writing out a perception starts something happening in my mind, because I'm kind of stepping back and I'm just not describing it. It's more like I'm conscious that this is, like the Course would say, you know, I've defined the problem, right? So I'm starting with that part, that this is what I'm seeing as my problem. Would you agree that it sort of starts that process of turning the mind, you know, a bit inward, or starting to take some responsibility?
Yes, yeah, I think that's a great starting point, because as long as perception is seen to be reality, then it seems to be that these things happen to me, and many of them, you could say, seem to be against my own will or against my own choice. And so it seems like there's an external world that's acting upon and interacting with the human being, and these perceptions are seen to be actual, factual occurrences and events and circumstances, and not just interpretations.
Right.
Like, imagine sitting down and saying to your son, or, you know, it's my perception that this soup is hot. You know, it might be like, what do you mean, Mom? Is it hot or not? What do you mean it's your perception? Or I'm interpreting that this soup is hot. You know, that would be more accurate, because all perception is really an interpretation.
Yes, yes, I like that. Interpretation is very helpful. And I kind of find that myself, and when I see others that I might be working with, or it's always this sense, exactly what you were saying, that either you're like fighting against something and you feel like you got to change it, it's taking something away from you, or that, you know, you're so, let's say, tired, or you're kind of, you know, you're resigned to it, but it's not like a peaceful acceptance. So there is that place of where you feel like you're at the mercy of something.
Yes, that's it. And that's the very reason why we need to go deeper inside, underneath the perception.
Right. Right, and as you said, perception is everything. It's the whole cosmos. So really, there's nothing that can be excluded. There isn't any exception to this.
Yes. Yeah, and one thing I could add that really will help simplify this for everyone is that when we are looking at distorted perception, which is the linear world, the linear cosmos, most people would agree that that perception involves the concept of a past, and a present, in the middle, and a future. Very much like in history class, you know, when you draw the timeline, you put a little mark in the middle and call that the present, and everything to the left is the past, everything to the right is the future. And also we could say, why is that even important, is that there's some basic cause and effect assumptions that we really believe that the past causes the present and then therefore the future. So we see that there's causes in the world and there's effects. And even Newtonian physics, you know, basic physics, for every action there's a reaction. And all of the disciplines that, whether it's the medical model or whether it's science, chemistry, every discipline is based really on Newtonian physics. And it's based on the belief that there are causes and effects. And even philosophies that are looking at, you know, what caused the Big Bang and what causes things to happen in nature and so forth. So that's important to understand, in the sense that that's what makes it distorted perception, is the belief that there's causes in perception, causes in the world, and effects. And what we're going to learn from this diagram is that the mind is where the causation is. And the deeper you go into these rings, these levels, that the levels that are inside, as you go deeper in, those are all causative. So perception is basically an effect of the ring that's right beneath it, which is emotion. So that's really important to see, that the causation is going to go inward into the mind and not be like, you hurt my feelings, You make me mad, or I stayed out in the sun too long and I burned my skin. And I left the cake in the oven and it burned the cake. All of these perceptions that involve causes and effects in the world are all false without exception. And that's why we need a healed perception that shows a whole different view of the world in order to have peace of mind.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes when we're learning these things, like you were saying, it's 1% theory and 99% practical application. So we have to sort of, like you said, go through these and have our own experiences, right? And those correct our distorted perceptions, almost like one at a time or more, you know, as you open more. But let's go deeper. So let's go to the level of emotion. So what can we say there? So we can, let's talk about that. Let's talk about at the level of emotion.
Well, in A Course in Miracles, Jesus teaches, he has a line, he says, you will look upon that which you feel within. And that is giving us that cause-effect relationship between the emotion, whether it's one of fear or all the derivatives of fear, guilt, anxiety, shame, all different types of pain, and then a perceived world that reflects those emotions, or emotions of love and happiness and joy and peace, and a perception that reflects that emotion. So it really seems complicated, but then when you realize Jesus says you have but two emotions, love and fear, then you can really see that you have but two perceptions, healed perception and distorted perception, and the whole point is to come to that healing. So when you do the instrument for peace, it's important to be very specific about the emotions that are coming up and to write those out. And you might say that even doing a number of these instruments for peace and using these levels of mind and using this practice over and over, it starts to build a confidence that you are making headway. And I think over the years, that's one of the most important feedback things that I've received is people say, wow, I kept practicing this and doing these instruments for peace and working through all these different issues that I was having. And I started to gain a bit of confidence, like this is really taking me where I want to go. Because the ego will try to sabotage the whole healing process and say, you're never going to get there, you're never going to make it, you're stuck, you'll always be stuck, you'll always be guilty. The ego is really trying to convince the mind that it's trapped and it will always be trapped. And it doesn't really want there to be an escape. So that's really important when you keep that in mind too. So the emotion causes the perception. Projection makes perception, Jesus tells us. And therefore, it's very important to allow the emotions into awareness and pay close attention to what those emotions are.
Yeah, no, that's great, everything you've shared, because I would definitely say that by practicing it, I've seen it. I've definitely seen what you've said. And what I love about what you've shared in this map of the mind, or what I like to call the GPS or levels of the mind, is very systematic. So it's like a step-by-step so that you don't get lost in, you know, I think the words you've used, like an intellectual bypass or spiritual bypass, that
yes.
This really encourages you to, you know, really get to the root. And, you know, like not deny what you're seeing, not deny your emotions, but like as you've been sharing again and again, to keep acknowledging that that's not where the cause is. Go deeper, that's not where the cause is.
Yes, it is important to see that because there's so much conditioning, I call it backwards thinking in there, where it seems like that the world of form and the body are the cause, and that the mind is the effect of the body and the world.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody says, I'm really hot, it's a very hot day. The assumption is that the temperature is in the world, it's having an effect on the body. I am turns into I am feeling very hot. And so we could see that with all kinds of things in our experience on Earth. World is the cause, and our mind is the effect. I have a sore shoulder. It's like the sore shoulder pain. No, the sore shoulder is not causing any pain. You might say it's all a projection of the pain in the mind. I'm thirsty. No, the body, it seems like the body gets thirsty, but and the body is telling, we better get some drink pretty soon because I'm getting very thirsty. But actually, the mind is where the thirst is. It's actually believing in lack and scarcity, and it's thirsting for truth, and it's projected out onto the body as being thirsty for a drink. So some of you remember from the Bible, when Jesus met the woman at the well, he basically told her all about life experiences, and then she thought he was some kind of a mind reader or a prophet. And then finally he said, drink of me and you will never thirst again. So that's why we're doing these levels of mind. We're following this GPS in all the way to the core, to the light in our mind, so we can drink of that light and never thirst again, never hunger again, never want for anything of the world, but see ourselves as whole and complete.
Yeah, and I can say, like, I know for some of us on this call, like, these thoughts might be newer, some of these ideas. So I just felt like I wanted to share that. I know in medicine, what always kept me searching is because I was trying to find that fundamental place that was like the common denominator that would tie all these things together, all the things that supposedly made health. And when we would say diet, or we would say, you know, this or this, there would always be exceptions. Like I would say, you know, like let's say little kids, there are times where they're growing and growing and they seem to eat nothing. You know, there's a certain area, especially when they're like 2, 3, there's times where we see that and it doesn't make sense. Yet something is happening. Or we would talk about, like, let's say in pregnancy, and we would say, well, you know, you need to eat this and this and this. And yet you'd have stories about women that were in, you know, areas when it was like war and starvation and, you know, had very little but had healthy babies. So, or you would read about the yogis or different, you know, meditation practices where they could go for days without things that everyone would, you know, even sometimes it would be oxygen or it would be food or water. So all of these things made me question the things on the outside as being the ultimate source. And so as you're sharing, it's the mind. And these different situations, you know, whatever, whether it was, you know, that these yogis or whatever, like the mind has been trained so well, but it, there is that level of training. I mean, it's not something like we can read it and we can say, okay, well, you know, I'll stop doing it. It doesn't work like that. Again, that's the theory. And so then it's the practical application until it becomes a authentic experience.
Yeah, that's it. That's great that you mentioned earlier that awakening and enlightenment is, you know, 1% principle and 99% practice. And actually we could say that what we're going over here today, even the levels of mind, the GPS, we're still working on principle. So I'm not trying to discount or dismiss principle, because if you practice the wrong principle, you'll go nowhere. And
right.
So principle is extremely important. Even if it's 1% of the spiritual journey, it's an extremely important 1%. And I would say even there have been many teachers of A Course in Miracles and many students, but there's such a fear and resistance of the actual principle that is underneath the Course, you might even say of the 50 principles at the beginning, that a lot of the errors that are made are principle errors, the principle has not been grasped. And that's why we have 31 chapters basically teaching the principle, and then 365 lessons in the workbook that are about the practical application of the principle. But you wouldn't have 31 chapters. Jesus wouldn't spend 31 chapters trying to get the mind clear on principle if principle wasn't important. So the principle is the atonement principle. It's forgiveness, complete forgiveness. And yet, even if you feel that resonates with you, the word forgiveness or innocence, the actual experience of it, like you're saying, takes a lot of practice, a huge amount of practice, and you go through many stages with that practice. And it's not to be discouraged, but it's great that you're bringing that point up, that even there have been very great and helpful teachers of the Course that would fall into errors in terms of principle or transfer of training. So those are both absolutely essential to have an awakened mind.
Right, right. And I'm reminded of this story that you shared of someone, I think it was one of your students, and he had some kind of an illness. I think it was a heart disease or something, and that he was healing, and then he felt it was okay for him to, like, stop taking medicines, and he did. And then he got sick, like he just had to go back or something. And I remember you were talking to him, and to me it kind of brought out that idea of what you're saying, that, you know, this is a path where the more systematic we can be, the more clarity, the more we can, you know, join with our brothers and sisters to help us, then we won't fall into those, you know, mistakes, because you take a theory and you misapply it, and, you know, and then you say, well, you know, this is what my intuition said or this is what guidance said, but there was some confusion, because you would never be guided to do something that would, you know, harm yourself, you know, or harm another.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that example very well. It's a few things that the man got confused on, because he kept feeling about diet and then medicine and exercise, and basically the guidance was just really dealing with one area, but he was trying to make radical shifts in all three areas, stop exercising and stop taking his heart medication and changing, and really not changing his diet sufficiently. So he was basically not really tuned into his guidance, and that's where he ended up having a heart attack. I think he had a couple heart attacks after that.
Yeah, because actually as we work through this, whether it be the instrument of peace or this levels of mind, we do get more clearer, and so the guidance can emerge, right? The true guidance.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we keep going below now, so we're getting, because the other thing is that I remember, again, in your YouTube video where you talk about emotions, and you say, you have this thing where you say, you know, feel your way, right? Feel your way to enlightenment. You have to go with the feeling, and you say that the feeling, that's just one level. You gotta go deeper.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people want a very simple approach, and so with doing a lot of travels and meeting a lot of people, I would meet a lot of people that really just emphasize the emotions, and they would say, you know, David, can you feel it? Feel the love. Feel the pain. It was all feel, and those actually were a lot of people that kind of fell for a lot of simplistic spirituality, where they would try to divided it up to the head and the heart, and the longest distance you ever travel is from the head to the heart, where they'll talk about left brain and right brain and get out of your left brain, get into your right brain. And these are very simplistic projections of these levels of mind, as if it's an either or, as if the right brain was better than the left brain, or the feelings were important and the thoughts were not. And this whole diagram really shows it from a holistic perspective, that there, all these things are extremely important, and you really need to see how they relate to one another. Otherwise, you know, you can find yourself overemphasizing something and not realizing that there's something that's there that you're missing. So, for example, when people would say to me, you know, it's all about emotions, you know, you've got to feel it, feel the love, feel the truth. And they would be very negative around thinking and thoughts. They would say, stop thinking and get out of your head and all those kind of things. But they didn't really recognize that thought, cognition is called when you study psychology, that the thought causes emotions. So not only can you not dismiss the thought, but it's actually the thoughts that cause the emotion. So some of you might know of rational emotive therapy. There's been some really good teachings on the connection between thought and emotions, and that's one that I remember studying that in university. And then when I got into the course, Jesus was saying, yeah, that's Albert Ellis, rational emotive therapy, it's very important. It's showing the connection between the thoughts and the emotions.
Yeah, yeah. Because sometimes I totally agree with what you're saying, because you hear these philosophies that if you just, you know, choose a better, I don't know, better emotion, like choose a better feeling, but there's a sense that it's like a weed. You haven't quite gotten to the root, and it comes back again, you know, when you're gardening. So it's like there's something deeper. And I loved when I heard that on your YouTube video, and then I saw that in my own experience, that we go deeper. So let's talk about thoughts then. And so we were at perception, we've gone through emotions, and now we're at the level of thoughts. So what can we say here? What can we say about thoughts?
Well, thoughts either make the physical or they create the eternal, and you might say, what's the difference between that is huge. When we're getting back to opening to the real world and opening to the kingdom of heaven within, we want to get in touch with those eternal thoughts. Like you might say, even the Christ is a thought in the mind of God, or an idea in the mind of God, but that's purely abstract. That's not a time-space thought. We're not even talking about Jesus the man or the historical Jesus when we talk about the pure Christ idea as a perfect idea and a perfect divine mind. So it's interesting that that thoughts that seem to involve the past and the future, that involve time and space, those thoughts are basically described in the Course in Miracles as attack thoughts. And when we think of attack thoughts, we generally think of like very angry kind of thoughts that produce a lot of anger or hatred. But actually, any thought of the past or the future, of pain or pleasure, of any of the dualities of the world, those are all attack thoughts. How important are those thoughts? Well, if you study the first lessons of the Course in Miracles, and you'll see how important those basic lessons are, you know, starting off with number one, nothing I see means anything. If you go through those early lessons, you'll realize that he'll stop at certain points and he'll say, well, you know, the reason this one's true is because this idea is why all the previous ones are true. And then if finally he gets to lesson 23, which is kind of the first really glimpse of the escape hatch from the distorted mind. And from the ego, he says, I can escape the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. And if you go deeper into lesson 23, you'll see there's a key there. There's like a master key that he placed inside of lesson 23. First of all, he's giving you the entire escape from time and space in lesson 23 after he's warmed you up with verse 22. And he's saying, if you get this one, you will completely escape it. You don't need the rest of the book. You don't need any other lessons. All you need is to get one lesson perfectly. I can escape from the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. And the master key is in there. He says that you must see, though, that thoughts of attacking and of being attacked are the same. So he is literally dissolving all sense of victimhood in lesson 23 when he's saying, your mind's preoccupied with these attack thoughts, and you have to release them. You have to let them go, but don't think that there's a difference between being attacked and attacking. That all attack thoughts are the same. They don't have different categories. They don't have a victim category and a victimizer category. And as soon as the mind can realize that one master key thing, that they're all the same, then he says you will be willing to let them go. You're not going to let them go when you think there's two versions of attack thoughts. If you think there's two versions, you're going to always be running a story. Well, did you see the way they looked at me? And did you see that glare that they had? And they weren't smiling when they said that to me. You know, it's always going to find evidence for either somebody else mistreated me or I, as a person, mistreated somebody else. And there will always be guilt. And there will always be, you know, the experience of a nightmare going on whenever the mind gets stuck in that.
Yeah, yeah. And I was actually sharing this with someone who works with victims of, like, domestic violence, and we were having this conversation, and we were talking in our respective experiences that, like, I use this example, like, a woman could have an experience of, you know, like, of being a quote-unquote a victim of domestic violence and all that, and then the next relationship that could repeat again, and it could repeat again, and it could repeat again. And that really, when you have this framework, it helps you really understand where that happens, because there is something that's being held in the mind that is not exposed, so it's not a conscious thing, but subconsciously, you know, beneath the level of perception that's there, this belief in attack, or I am attacked, or I can be attacked, or there is attack, and it sort of funnels out into, like, a repetitive experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's it. It's just practicing with everything that you perceive, but you just actually just start to notice if there's any kind of reaction and emotion in the mind, then there still is this belief that there are victims and victimizers. And just today, for example, I was said before the talk tonight, and there was like headlines, and it was saying Donald Trump had made some kind of statement about that Hillary Clinton had enabled, she was an enabler, and she had enabled her husband's affair. And then on The View, Whoopi Goldberg and the ladies on The View, they took the other point of view. They said, that's ridiculous. You know, they took the flip side. You know, no. She didn't enable it. She was at the mercy of it, you know, the other way around. And then when you go much deeper, you actually start to realize that both of these thoughts, that you could be an enabler of some kind of an event, or you could be at the mercy, the victim of some kind of an event, both of those are attack thoughts. And if you go much deeper, you start to see, oh, it's this past-future thing. As long as my mind is caught in past thinking and future thinking, and it's still projecting the error out onto the world, then it does seem to be that there's a lot of intense, upsetting emotions that are tied in with those two different versions of attack thoughts. And Jesus is basically saying, yeah, you're not going to find peace of mind until you give them all up and you see that they're all the same. They're all equally disturbing to your peace of mind, to your mind. So you might as well let them all go at once, because that's the way you're going to let them go at all.
Right, right. So the two different thought systems, like we had talked about the two different emotions. So you have attack thoughts, or you have thoughts of, how would you describe them, of oneness, of joining?
In the Course they're called your real thoughts. He says you do have real thoughts underneath these attack thoughts, and he will actually guide you to those real thoughts in the workbook lessons. So this through, you might say, like meditation techniques and sinking in your mind, down to the kingdom of heaven within, those would be the real thoughts. And those thoughts come from God, so they're completely shared. Attack thoughts are our private thoughts. That's why they're pushed a lot of times into the unconscious mind, because they're so intense and so extreme that the mind can't even stand to keep them in awareness. So it represses them. It pushes them out of awareness. And those all have to be allowed to come up and handed over to the Holy Spirit.
Right, and as long as they're repressed, they project, right? And that creates the perception that?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. If they're repressed, they actually get pushed underneath, and then they turn into beliefs. They turn thoughts that are pushed out of awareness turn into unconscious beliefs. And so you might say that that's that next ring that we're going to get into underneath there, is because you can actually believe things about your thoughts that aren't true. For example, you can say, my thoughts are ineffectual, you know, and that's a common belief in the human realm. It's like, oh, I've got a lot of crazy thoughts. If people only knew the crazy things that I think, it's a good thing they're just whirling around in my brain. But those, they aren't. Those thoughts are literally projecting the entire cosmos, and they aren't ineffectual at all. Even though they can be believed to be ineffectual, they actually are having a profound effect. They're actually projecting out the entire cosmos. So they're not ineffectual at all.
Yeah, and I mean, just a small example, I can totally tell, like, when I have any kind of a pain or burning or this or this, I can, it's not just burning out, it's like the anger in the mind, I can see it as one. They're not different. It just is a level, you can say, but it's almost kind of like something happens to the mind where what you were saying, like that everything was fragmented, that this is happening here, then this causes this and this, and they're all different. And when you work through this levels of the mind, I feel like you start to see it's like all one tree. You know, it's all one tree bearing, you know, fruits and whatever along the way, and you really can't separate it. You either have to choose one or the other.
Yeah, it's beautiful to just begin to open up to that. And with all of these levels, you know, we're starting to see the causations within. So these beliefs and these thoughts and emotions get projected out into distorted perceptions. And that's one way of the ego dealing with this intense hatred and rage and fear that's in the mind and guilt. It will either attempt to project it and see it as if it's outside, or it will try to repress it and push it down into the subconscious mind. And I have kind of an extreme example of that. One time I was traveling to a city, a friend of mine had called, and he was talking to me and asking for counseling help. And I said, well, what is it? How can I help you? And he said, well, I have two girlfriends. I have a triangle going on here. And you know that Jennifer Warren song, torn between two lovers, feeling like a fool, loving both of them is breaking all the rules. He said, I've got a vicious triangle going on, and I'm trying to practice the course. And he said, it's really intense. There's a lot of intense emotions coming up. And he said, could you come to the triangle? Could you come and help me with the triangle? And I said, I said, well, perhaps you could bring the triangle to me. He said, I don't think the triangle wants to go anywhere. They're pretty angry. You have to come to the triangle. So I said, okay, I'll come to the triangle. So I go there, and I showed a movie that was very, very good at bringing those kind of triangle thoughts up, almost like a Fatal Attraction movie would, you know, where you have that kind of scenario. And during the movie, one of the women, I had to stop the movie in the middle of the movie because her entire left side from watching the movie I was showing had become paralyzed. She literally went into paralysis. So she projected all of this guilt onto the body. And then the other one, she was not so much into projecting onto the body, repressing and projecting onto the body. She was very angry, and she was screaming and shouting. So she was projecting, we could say, her anger towards this man and towards this other woman. So these were like extreme examples to see that once you go inside the mind, the ego wants to either repress these thoughts and turn them into unconscious beliefs, or it wants to project them and blame the world or blame the body. And that's going to be very important to understand that when you try to go for healing.
Yes, Yes, especially in chronic situations where things seem to, you know, we have these cases where people try so many different therapies, but there's something that's blocked. There's something that's blocked, and projecting on the body, definitely, I see that. I definitely see that. So now that we're kind of really at the level of the belief, and the beliefs are, again, the Course makes it so simple, right? There's only two sources of where these beliefs come from, again.
Yes, it's true. There is, you might say that belief is the domain of the ego, and so all beliefs are of the ego. However, the Holy Spirit can use what the ego made. So out of all the belief in separation and the trillions and trillions of beliefs that sprung from the belief in separation, the Holy Spirit swooped in and in less than an instant neutralized that entire false belief system with forgiveness. So you might say that forgiveness itself is a belief, but it's the only belief that takes you out of all the rest. So it's like the needle in the haystack. It's the one belief that you can actually share with all your brothers and sisters. When we look at the beliefs in the world and all the differences of gender and sexuality and height and weight and race and ethnicity and on and on and on, there is no universal theology. There is no universal belief system. There's no universal religion in the terms of concepts and beliefs and theology. But forgiveness is almost like a blanket of peace that's still in the realm of consciousness, but it brings only peace. It can be completely shared because it's shared with the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is the one who is the source of the belief in forgiveness. So that's why it's so important to open up to your inner guide, to your higher self, to your intuition, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, because that presence will take you back to the atonement, which is still a belief. It's still a correction. And in heaven, there aren't any corrections because there is no error. But it's a very important belief. In fact, you know, you can spend the rest of your life, so to speak, on earth, the rest of your parable, pouring your mind's energy just into experiencing forgiveness, because that's really the best use of time and space.
Yeah, and sometimes I find that when I'm guiding others through this exercise, or the leap from thoughts to beliefs can be tricky, that our minds can be filled with thoughts, but that something happens when we start to see this as a belief, like something, how can I say it, it gets more consolidated, as opposed to all the thoughts that are swirling?
Yes, yes. It is very, very deep in the sense that that beliefs are like these unquestioned assumptions. They're just assumed to be true. And it's almost like if you use a GPS analogy, you know, that your GPS can guide you, but you do have to have the electricity and you have to have your GPS functioning. And in a computer, for example, if you had a new Mac computer and it was doing all of the processes and the programs performing beautifully, high speed and so on and so forth, and then suddenly it started to get slow and inconsistent and whatever, and let's say you had a virus on the hard drive, you can see what that would do. You may not even be aware of what it is. You just start to see it working very much, very slow and very inconsistent. Maybe the screen's flashing on and off and it's doing all kinds of crazy, unpredictable things. That's the same with the belief. If you have an unconscious belief and on the surface of things, you think you've got it going pretty well, and then things start to get a little crazy and shaky, and the wheels start to fall off and things start to fall apart in your perceived life as a person, that's because there's still an unconscious belief that's still operating, and you've got to almost clean the hard drive before you can come back to that flow that you're accustomed to, that's part of your natural state of mind.
Right. And so, like, the beliefs are those beliefs that are not forgiveness, but they're beliefs in separation, in some sort of separation from our source.
Yes. And for some of you who watch the movies, like the movie Dark City, when they finally do get down into the subconscious mind and the giant mask opens up, what's behind the mask is time. So you might say that aside from believing you're a man or a woman, or you're young or old or fat or skinny or beautiful or ugly, there's something much deeper than that. Believing you're this race or that race, this socioeconomic status or that, you know, the belief that's underneath everything is the belief in linear time. And so when we talk about two belief systems, you might say the Holy Spirit perceives time as simultaneous, which is a reflection of its instantaneous nature. And then the ego has constructed limits as present and future. And all the other concepts of whatever you believe to be in terms of a person or personality, all of those rest on the belief in time. And the Course emphasizes the holy instant. That's why Eckhart Tolle emphasizes the power of now, because it's actually the escape hatch that takes you back to eternity.
So we're going really deeper, and so as we go beneath it, we go to desire, right? We go to desire, and let's talk about that. So how can that bring us into alignment, into this place, what you're saying, that timelessness, into that holy instant?
Well, when you reach down to the core of the chart, you know, all you can do is go thank God that there's something deeper than belief. Because if belief was as deep as it goes, and that's really deep, that's way down in the mind. If belief was as deep as it went, then this world and hell would be eternity. It would be like a feeling of being stuck in hell, stuck in Dante's Inferno. But the desire or the prayer is the connection with the power of the mind, with the source. So your prayer is your power, and your desire is your power. And so, you know, you might say that Jesus says you made the ego by believing in it, and you can dispel it by withdrawing your belief from it. Another thing that really got me was I remember reading in the Course where Jesus said, truth can be restored to your awareness by your desire as it was lost by your desire for something else. So this desire for something more than everything, more than heaven, that desire is underneath the belief in separation. But if I desire healing, if I desire wholeness, if I desire source, connection, then that is so powerful that it can bring the mind into complete alignment, where when the desire is unified, then we find the belief is forgiveness, the thought is our real thoughts, the emotion is love, and the perception is a healed perception or true perception, what Jesus calls it. So everything comes into alignment. Jesus talked about this too in the Bible when he said, let thine eye be single. He was not talking about necessarily only your, like a third eye kind of idea from the East, but he was basically saying, let your prayer be unified, let your prayer be single. And if you have a unified prayer and unified desire, then your mind will become healed and whole, because that's what it means. That's causative of everything. And so I think the prayer for peace in the Course that really struck me the most, I think I heard it on a video one time before I even read it. I heard Jerry Jampolsky saying these words, and the words I heard were, the peace of God is my one goal, the aim of all my living here, the end I seek, my purpose and my function and my life while I abide where I am not at home. And when Jerry spoke those words, I was watching the video. I think it was an early Course in Miracles video. My heart just leaped open because I thought, oh, my gosh, that's it. Jesus is using desire to focus the mind, to bring the mind back to a perfect purification, and all the rings literally will disappear, and the mind will return back to perfect abstract creation when that desire becomes single and unified. So to me, that's the answer to everything. That's why it's at the very core of these rings. But if you have a strong desire for truth or for love or for peace of mind, that will literally, through the power of that focus, it will transform your entire consciousness. And in the end, it will lead to the disappearance of the universe and the remembrance of God.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, what I share is coaching for inner peace, and it's inspired by health is inner peace, because all of my search in medicine, alternative forms, mind-body medicine, and just my own personal experience with, you know, different issues with chronic pain or illness, I sort of feel like when I was using this tool, David, like it was uncovering everything that I had held, like all these ideas, all these emotions, thoughts, beliefs. And it was almost like, as you've often said, you know, the Buddha says, you know, emptying your mind. So it was like emptying the mind, purifying the mind of everything that was other than this desire for peace, like everything that was different or separate. And it was so interesting because usually in the world of form and, you know, in our training, especially in medicine, it's always about, how can I heal this? How can I fix this? How can I heal the body? How can I fix this situation? And I realized that when I worked through this and I got to this point where all I really wanted was to be peaceful, that I didn't want to fight this, I didn't want to be against this or pushing this away or going running towards that peace, like it's hard to put into words, but it was like I was so tired that I didn't feel like I had the energy, first of all, but it was also like that it didn't matter, that as long as I had the peace, then somehow I didn't even know, I wasn't even thinking about what would happen or not happen, but that just became so important. And when I let that be, then, you know, I did experience healing, like within a few weeks and, you know, all of that. And I'm not trying to say that you do it for that, but it's almost like this process empties it, and then you are taken care of, I guess. This peace of God isn't something, you know, like a airy-fairy thing. Like, it sustains you. It is what is your source.
Yeah, it's so beautiful to hear of your practice of it and your use of it, because when I met you in New York, and then you've taken this and practiced it, you might say that the self-concept of Seema is going through transformations that are reflecting what's happening in consciousness. So you've kind of gone from being Seema the physician to Seema the metaphysician. And then in the end, then there will just be the spirit and pure absolute love and oneness. And so that's a good example of how perception shifts and changes. Our perception of ourself even changes. The more that you saw the power of the mind, the more that you were able to see these levels and to practice the instrument for peace and practice these things, then you went through a healing experience where the pain started to dissolve and disappear. And then when that works, then you want to share that. Who would not want to share that? You know, not that you're saying, well, you should have a goal of healing the body, but certainly removal of symptoms and pain leaving one's awareness as an effect of healing is a wonderful experience. And so you're just being very practical in your application of this. And I think also the Spirit uses everything. So some may come to you and say, oh, you're a doctor. And even the doctors and credentials, that can be part of people opening up and saying, well, I trust that. And then the more they see your happiness and your joy and your peace, then they start to get introduced to Seema, the metaphysician. And before you know it, they'll be really introduced to the Spirit, their own Spirit, the Spirit that is who we all are.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Yeah, I liked what you had said, that you used to be a physician of the body and now you're a physician of the mind. So I've been trying that out. The metaphysician, I'll have to see. I've been trying that out, physician of the mind. I'm like, yeah, I think I can see that. I like that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like Hahnemann was the founder of homeopathy, and that was something I studied in my journey. And he would say that, you know, one of the highest duties of the physician is obviously to relieve suffering, but it's also to see what are the obstacles that stand to the cure. And I feel like your tool gives us, okay, if your goal is peace of mind, then what are the obstacles that are standing in the way? So what are they? Let's go through them systematically. So you see it. So you see that, like you said, you're choosing this. I mean, we didn't emphasize this, but, you know, we're choosing our perceptions, we're choosing our emotions, we're choosing the thoughts, we're choosing the beliefs, and it comes to desire. So then, like, there isn't, like, a mystery about this, right? There isn't a mystery. And, you know, it becomes like, yeah, we can do this. You know, it can be done.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I've worked with so many people over these last 3 decades, and one of the people in our community, she was very much into homeopathy. That was part of her inroads into spirituality. She's into homeopathy. She got into the course. She got into my teachings. She went deeper and deeper and deeper with it. She even, at one point, had her heart stop completely. And she was with her daughter, and they both joined so deeply in the miracle that they both were actually in a state of joy, even though her heart had stopped beating. That's a nice reflection of where your mind training has taken you, when you can be in joy and your heart is not beating. And then she's just gone deeper and deeper and deeper still with this in a very, very devotional way. And so she's, you know, in the past couple of years, she's had a couple of levitating experiences where she's just began levitating. So, you know, these are all just perceptions, too. There's nothing special about that, but it's like that's definitely a perception of loosening from a body identification when you get into levitation, because, again, that seems to go beyond what the world calls the laws of this world. There aren't too many bodies that float around. And when you take your mind deeper and deeper toward that desire of wholeness and completion, then those are just reflections that come. And, you know, they can include symptom removal, levitation, raising the dead. You know, there's all kinds of things that come with that that would definitely be called, we could call them spiritual phenomenon, but those are just reflections of the mind coming to a single desire or wholeness and healing. So it's very encouraging to see that this leads to peace of mind, and you'll get a lot of signs and symbols along the way that let you know you're on the right track.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. It's beautiful just this joining today that we've had, and it's beautiful. I want to kind of, is there any other thing, David, that you'd want to say about this tool? And then I think I would kind of open it up for questions from the others who are with us today.
Well, I know with the Instrument for Peace, it's interesting because I've used that for years, and I would crisscross on travels all over the world into many countries, and I kept crisscrossing with students of Byron Katie. And sometimes I would have my Instruments for Peace, and then they would have all these worksheets from Byron Katie about turning things around. And so I noticed when I was online here at Level of the Mind, I went through Instrument for Peace. Yeah, yeah, I remember this. And then I did have a student of mine years ago who basically got to the point where basically when you get to a point of release is when you start to realize that you're expecting to be something different than it is. You're expecting a different outcome, a different form, a different appearance. And, of course, anybody who knows studying Byron Katie is loving what is and turning things around. That's exactly what I've been teaching for my many, many years, for 3 decades with the Course, of turning around the backwards thinking, which is another word for private thoughts. And of course, Byron Katie, when you get down to the level of belief, she would just say, turn it around, turn it around. And I noticed that my student had actually, at the bottom of Instrument for Peace, had actually incorporated some of that as well. I got to the bottom and I said, oh, look at this, turn the belief around. And so I see that she had studied Byron Katie's work and my work, and so that's thrown in there as well. So you're getting a double bonus here of her process and my process of using the Course all coming together. So I think that's important because in the end, we have to realize that the world is not causative, that the world is an unreal effect of an unreal cause, the ego, and that there are real thoughts that we could say the forgiven thoughts. The Spirit shows us the world in a simultaneous way, in a whole new way, and that's where we come to the peace of mind. So I did say at the very, very beginning of this work that basically there's only one problem, and that problem is separation from God and from Source, and that this whole Instrument for Peace and this whole levels of mind process is designed to bring you so deep within that you have an actual experience that there is no world outside of you. And that is certainly talked about in Lesson 132 of the workbook of A Course in Miracles. There's no world apart from what you think, he says in that lesson, and then he goes even further. He says, there is no world, exclamation point. He's taking you all the way into the kingdom of heaven and to a revelatory experience of blazing light that he calls the great rays. And that's happened to me a few times, and all I can say is in that experience, then I can see the world as a flimsy veil and also see the witnesses to love everywhere being in touch with that light. So I have, on this website as well, I've taken different steps that we've just gone through. Step one, perception, and basically shared ideas from the Course, either direct quotes or paraphrased ideas that have come from the Holy Spirit through me. And then step two is emotion. Step three, much deeper to thought. And step four, down to belief. And then finally, step five, down to desire. Those five steps take you in, and you really get in touch with what you truly, truly, really, really want. Not from an ego standpoint, but from a sense of the deepest prayer to be at one with everything and everyone. So I find it very effective, and I'm so glad that you're using it and that you're finding it very effective too, and just sharing that and sharing the gift of that with all the beloveds that come our way.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for, just really sharing this tool and taking the time to go through it. And I love that on the website, it's so, it's being developed and, more will access it, because I feel like it saves so much time. It doesn't matter how many years you've been doing the Course or not doing the Course even. This is something we can all grasp, we can all understand. And, like you've often said, the desire of your heart, there's ladders. And there's rungs of the ladder. So wherever we are, I feel this tool can meet us. Wouldn't you agree? Wherever we are, it could help us to just...
Yeah, it's very, very direct. Very direct. And it's interesting, too, you ask how I came across the Course. How this levels of mind sight came about was my friend Laverne, who was down in Mexico, she's been using Instrument for Peace a lot. It's at the back of our printed Movie Watcher's Guide to Enlightenment, and it appears on different websites and has appeared throughout the years, our miracleshome.org and different sites we've had it on. But she said it for some reason it was kind of still obscure, like you had to dig through my stuff to find it. Of course, you were there years ago, so you did the digging and you did find it. But she felt it should be more prominently displayed because it's such a core of the healing process. So I talked with her and another friend, Sam, came up with the levelsofmind.com domain name, and then those two really combined, Sam with her amazing webmaster and graphic skills, and basically Laverne with her just passion to have this put together in a very visual and straightforward and simple way that could be practiced. So it's almost like this website is an answer to their prayer for this to be made readily available on the internet.
Yeah, and our prayer too. We're joined with them, so that's awesome. So it's levelsofmind.com is where they can find the instrument for peace, as well as I've been on that website, and it is beautiful. And it's lovely because you could even type stuff in, and it just kind of follows it through, so you don't have to type it again. And literally in about 10-15 minutes, you can work through something like an upset or whatever is troubling you. So it's very efficient. Okay, so there are actually, David, we have a lot of callers on the call today. So I'm just going to ask, if you'd like to ask a question, you could press star 6 on your phone, and it should unmute you, and then you can ask a question. Okay, let me see. Sometimes okay.
Hello.
Hold on. Let me just... Yes, who is this?
I'm Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about when you do go through the levels of mind, and if you get to, you go through a particular upset and you get to the expectation, oh, I want so-and-so to be different or whatever it is, and then you're asking, or you're realizing, actually, I just want peace. I just want peace of the peace of God. I just want peace of mind. From that decision, I just want peace. And ways of dealing with that situation or behavioral outcomes, in a sense, come from that decision.
So I'm not sure. I have a little trouble hearing you. So let me see if I can say your question. So you're saying when you're working with the levels of mind and you get to the bottom, to the desire, and you're saying you want the peace of God. Is that right so far?
Yep.
Okay. And then you said something about outcomes. I didn't quite hear what you were saying, so I can just repeat it for the others. Can you say that again?
So when you said, or in your heart you go, I really want the peace, can from spirit, can an outcome or a behavior in regards to that particular situation be given to you from the spirit? Because I know that spirit will help you with form decisions or outcomes as well.
So are you asking, so when you ask for the peace of God, are there changes in a form or outcome or behavior that could occur, or could that you be asked, like from guidance, that you would do as well?
Yeah.
Okay. David, did you understand that question?
Yes.
Okay.
When you come down to that point of really wanting the healing, desiring the healing, then you might say that that is answering the form of a question, would I rather be right or happy? That at the deepest level of mind, to open up to healing is the desire to be happy instead of being right. And so let's look at that for a moment. It means, would I rather be happy right now, or would I rather be right about the way the ego set up the whole cosmos? It's not even right about a particular circumstance or situation or person. It actually runs all the way to the point of do I want to be right about how the ego set the whole cosmos up? Now, if you come to that point where you feel that happiness, that really peace and supreme happiness and joy, there can be guidances that will come through that will just be extremely helpful as the healing process continues. And if you do experience still discomfort and you still feel ill at ease and upset in some degree or direction, then there's still a desire underneath to be right. And so you might say that that's where the instrument for peace, it helps you as you open your mind and again start to be aware of the pictures, the images, the memories, the thoughts that are coming up, and it gives you a chance to again go through perhaps another angle of the ego's projection, and again another one and another one as part of a cleansing and clearing and purifying of the mind. So it's true that if you truly come into that state of happiness and peace, then you feel very, very connected. And yes, guidance can come through. Oftentimes I feel if you listen to the stories of people who have gone through spiritual transformations and awakenings, that they have these epiphanies and these amazing, vast experiences, and then what pours through them from that point is just a blessing to the whole universe. It's a blessing to all human beings and everything and everyone in the universe.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.
Okay, so David, are you okay? We're going a little bit past the time, but are you okay to stay on? Or I'm not sure what
sure.
your time frame is. Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay.
That's great.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So, if anyone else would like to ask David a question, you can press *6, and that will unmute you. Sometimes I'm okay. So let me see what I can. So I'm just gonna unmute some people on my own. So if anyone has a question, we'll just do the best we can. So if you'd like to ask a question, I'm just going through the people on the call. Sometimes maybe it's not working from your side. So anyone have a question?
Hi, this is Deborah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Seema. How are you? Hi, David. How are you?
Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Good. I have a question. So, you know, the trust section in the manual for teachers speaks of the different stages?
Yes.
Okay, so not too long ago, I guess I would call it, I was kind of in the desert. So reading the course, understanding the principle and using it in my life, practically applying it. everything seemed to kind of get very dull. You know, not like a depression, but a clear distinction between, you know, what is this for? You know, what is anything for? And what is my function in it? And it became very clear that there was a very, very deep understanding of the differences of, you know, the spirit and who we are and this world that we have created. And it became very clear. Now, I'm kind of in the stage of, you know, I guess, I think the course talks about consolidating it. So, like, all of the principle and the practical application, and it now being consolidated where I can feel peace, you know, still move forward with my peace and see my function in the world. You know, I don't know, how would you explain maybe the next process of it all being consolidated or the joining? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think what you're describing is you're just coming into what Jesus calls your special function. And interesting that he even uses the word special with regard to function, because there's certain skills and abilities, certain things that have been learned, and certain things that are even valued and preferred, that all can be used by the Holy Spirit to kind of funnel the mind and take the mind towards this very, very profound experience of unification or oneness, as you've shared. So I would say, you know, as you move towards that, it's more of like of a witnessing or an observing. There's a quality of that that gets stronger and stronger. Another aspect of it is the sense of control. All sense of control just begins to dissolve and fade and fade and disappear. And what you're left with without this sense of control is this involuntary nature that Jesus describes, where he says miracles are involuntary. They should not be under conscious control. It's very, very peaceful, because it's as if you're just part of a flow, and you are that flow, and there's no sense of opposition or distinction. There's no sense of differences, that there's an awareness of the meaninglessness of differences. And so it's like a consolidation, like you use the word, or a sense of a merge, where you're just having a strong unification of your identity, of who I am, the I am presence. And therefore, the idea of specific functions, that even starts to leave. And you're, in that sense, you start to let go of the doer, of thinking that you've ever done anything right or wrong. And that's really opening up to this, just the spiritual reality of love and light. So that's just kind of putting some words towards it, but that, I hope that those have been helpful, just to give you a feel for the direction that you're moving in.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think you hit it perfectly. And for a little while, it was kind of scary, but it was a good scary. It was like, you know, a detachment from everything, just from the world and what I valued in the world and, you know, how I performed in the world, relationships. Kind of with everything, it got very, very dull and was a little scary, but I knew that I was in this place of uncomfort, a deep uncomfort. I knew that the more I felt uncomfortable, the closer I was to finding my true function. So I did push through it, and it lasted for a while. But like I said, it was a good scary. I knew that I would then find my function in it. Yes, merging. Thank you so much.
Oh, beautiful. Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks, Deborah. Okay, so anyone else? All right, I'll just check in. I'll just unmute everyone and in case anyone's having trouble. Anyone else have any questions? All right, let me just check one more thing, because maybe... Okay, and any other questions?
No, I'll turn it off. We're coming to the end of it. We're just asking questions.
Okay, David, I guess... That would be it. Is there? Would you like to, David? If you would like to close with a prayer with us, that would be maybe a lovely way to conclude.
Yes. Holy Spirit, please come into our mind to guide, to instruct, to bring this healing light to all that we bring to you. We pray that we hide nothing from your healing light, that we may transfer your beautiful love and mind training, that we may behold the light of God and the light of our reality and live and demonstrate that reality. Amen.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you for sharing and joining with us so deeply. Thank you.
Thank you, Seema. It's always a treat, and I make it up to Rochester. I certainly will look forward to seeing you again.
Yes, or I might make it up to you, so that might happen too.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you. Namaste and God bless.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Okay.